Hello and welcome to Digital Logic PC Gaming Podcast with Ender's Logic, Flopsy, and your host, Robert Digital. Now turn your game volume down, your earbuds up, and fucking enjoy.
Ready to start this motherfucker?
Yes, we are. How about you, Chad? You ready?
Chad. Dude, while the cat's away, the mouse will play. We're going to have fun on this podcast because that motherfucker that yells at us and is a negative Nancy, he's gone. So thank God. And not to say too much, he takes up most of the room in here too. So I feel like I can spread my wings, talk a little more.
Well, you guys share a side of the table, so yeah. Yeah, you probably feel like you got the whole place to yourself over there.
Yeah, Bobby has the command center on one side, and then we have the, I don't know, the dunce cap area. It's Chad and I. No shit, like usually our shoulders are touching.
So how are we going to start this off? We're going to do some word association?
Well, kind of. We've been doing this whole thing, you know. I'm not going to announce it, but yeah, we play a little game every time. So let's see what this one is. First of all, I was looking at your most games played, or your games most played.
Recent or most
all
hours?
Time.
Yeah. All time, yeah. Most hours? Okay.
Yep. And right now I have the top 7, because that's all I can fit in this picture. Right?
Okay.
So I want to see if you can name maybe 5 of them.
Probably.
Okay.
Okay, we're talking most hours played all time.
Yep.
Number one.
On Steam.
On Steam. Yeah.
Number WoW one. WoW wouldn't be on here, which would be number one, right?
Definitely.
Yeah, and jerking off would be...
it's a close two. I'm going to say number one is Super Monday Night Combat. I'm not going to try to go...
Not even on the list, man.
Are you serious? That list is incorrect.
I just looked it up, too. I agree with you. So... Maybe because the game... available anymore?
Well, I wonder because it's a free-to-play game, if it doesn't list that because I don't have it installed, so maybe it thinks I don't own it.
No, that's not true, because there's another free-to-play game.
I know, I've got like 270 hours in that game.
I think because it's not available anymore. I bet that's what it is.
I don't know, because I've seen it advertised on the store page. Like, what? It comes up... I mean, not on like the main page, but based off of like friend recommendations. I've seen it on there. Okay, well, number two, I'm going to go Left 4 Dead 2.
Okay.
Team Fortress 2 is probably after that.
Okay.
Got around 220 hours. Maybe Left 4 Dead 1.
Okay. Well done so far.
I put a lot of hours into Age of Empires Online.
Jeez, you're going down the list.
I know. I'm very familiar with that.
Yeah.
I remember things.
Except for the first one, you screwed the pooch.
Have I still not gotten the first one?
Well, it was Left 4 Dead.
It was okay. Yeah.
2.
I spent a lot of time on that game.
Yeah.
So Age of Empires Online, I think I'm around 130 hours on that.
Fuck you. How often do you look at this? Because you're off by 5 hours.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
I'm pretty familiar with it.
Jesus
Christ. And this is where I'm starting to draw a blank. I know I've got 85 hours in, what's that game we've been playing the last month or so? Divinity Original Sin.
Yep. That's tied with, for number 5.
Payday 2. Yeah.
So anyway, you got most of them. Okay, you crushed it. The reason I wanted to bring it up to you in that order is because I had no idea any of mine. So I thought maybe it'd be more fun. But since you're so knowledgeable about your own masturbation. All right. So let's go word association. One word in response to each one of these.
Okay.
Ready? Left 4 Dead 2.
I'm bad.
One word.
One word.
Don't think. Don't think. Just answer.
Zombies. I don't know.
Okay. Left 4 Dead 2. I mean, Team Fortress 2.
Team Fortress 2. Medic.
I would have said hats. You suck. You're getting all these wrong, by the way. Left 4 Dead 1.
Useless.
Okay. Whoa. Yeah, it does. Because it's useless now that Left 4 Dead 2, right?
Well, we'll talk about this later, but you know, they included, if you pre-purchased Evolve, you got Left 4 Dead 1 included, which is completely useless because if you own Left 4 Dead 2, then you can play all the characters and all the maps from Left 4 Dead 1. Left 4 Dead 1 is completely outdated, and people were afraid that was going to happen. People started a Steam group and had this petition saying, don't make Left 4 Dead 2 because it's going to outdate Left 4 Dead 1 immediately.
Wow.
And that's exactly what happened.
I had no idea. How do you get those characters unlocked?
You don't even have to unlock them anymore. It's just part of the game. Yeah, wow. You just pick a map from Left 4 Dead 1, like, I don't know, what was the hospital one, No Mercy, and you can play those original characters. Right.
Age of Empires Online.
Age of Empires Online, failed DLC.
I need a one micro, word, sir.
Okay, failed? Microtransaction. Okay. See, I bought that game because they're offering it as a package deal. You get everything unlocked for the low, low price of, I think, $17. And before that, it was their first attempt at doing microtransactions. So you buy a civilization, you buy an unlock for the civilization, you could end up spending over $100 or $200.
So wait, were they way ahead of the curve on the microtransaction thing? Or they did this in response to the microtransaction wave?
Well, this game came out in 2010, I think. And it wasn't a very successful game at all, even though it was a lot of fun. And I'm a big Age of Empires fan, and it was great, but it just, people did not like it, and that's why they ended up just bundling it. And also, it was a Microsoft game, and it had that whole Microsoft Live thing. That
so before the bundle, it would have cost you over $100.
Oh yeah, to get everything unlocked. Yeah.
Damn. Yeah. So Payday 2. We're almost done here, folks.
Payday 2, masks.
There you go. That's what I'm looking for. Divinity.
Long.
I was looking for Emilio. Because we play it together, but fuck you.
We haven't right. recently. We
Borderlands 1 over 2's not even on the list, son.
Yeah, I played a lot of 1.
Wow.
Okay, now that I'll say Emilio and slash Chad, because that was the first game we ever played together.
Aw. Yeah. Battlefield Bad Company 2.
Thank you. Destructible Environments. Two words I know, but... That was one of the first games that was really touting destructible environment. Like, you could blow up an entire house. Like, and it wasn't just like, boom, the house is gone. You took out a wall, and then this wall, and then the whole thing collapsed. That was pretty big for...
And it was a great game, too, right?
Yeah, it was a fun game.
So it was online?
Bad Company 2?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's how you racked up that many hours, then?
Yeah.
The PvP.
I'm surprised that's as high up there as it is.
Yeah. Well, obviously, we saw that it was flawed. Like, some shit... There's some shenanigans on your profile, man.
Apparently. I don't know why Super Monday Night Combat is not on there. I got addicted to that game for a little while. Yeah. First MOBA.
And then I was playing it casually, and I would come back and start playing with you, and you're fucking just hosing everybody. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you could get upgrades for that game, and it made you a lot more powerful, so it wasn't just like a flat MOBA.
Cool.
All right. So
let's move on to the game of the week.
Game of the week. Darkest Dungeon.
Darkest Dungeon, man. What's interesting about this is I saw it maybe a year ago at PAX off from PC Gamer. I was like, wow, this looks sweet. Then they said it was a roguelike RPG. And I was like, wow, that's... you might as well say skinny with big tits. Because, like, it's right down my alley, right? So then, I love the art, and I was like, okay, hopefully this will be cool. So then, what are we talking about? 8 months later, something like that? It comes out, and I play it, and I'm like, wow, this is my new Binding of Isaac. That's what I'm saying. That's how much I like this game. I can't wait. I was playing it up until the second you came over to record this. My girl was there. Oh, by the way, I have a character for each one of us. And there's a whole bunch of things going on. Go ahead. What did you think about it?
Well, let me read the description on Steam so people are a little familiar with it. Darkest Dungeon is a challenging, gothic, roguelike, turn-based RPG about the psychological stresses of adventuring. Recruit, train, and lead a team of flawed heroes against unimaginable horrors, stress, famine, disease, and the ever-encroaching dark. So I really liked it. I've only played about 4 hours of it. It's early access. It's a roguelike. So right away I was like, I don't know if I can do roguelikes anymore. And early access, not a good track record with
that. It seems pretty fleshed out, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's very stable. There's no bugs that I've come across.
And I haven't either.
Seems pretty on the ball. So yeah, it's a solid game. And it is a lot of fun. And it's got like a lot of things I like from other games put into one game. It's got things from XCOM that I really like.
Yeah, that's your squad management,
yeah,
right?
It's got things from, yeah, the squad
I would say management. They take it a step further, too. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you got to the part where the stress management stuff?
Yeah.
Where you bring
you have to deal with that fairly early on. But also things from, like, Rogue Legacy, I feel like there's some similarities with that.
That's game. Like the negative personality traits.
Yeah, kind of like that, but also just sending your team in or your guy in to go into the dungeon again and grind and earn a little bit more and come back. So you can have a whole bunch of people, on your team, and you choose four of them to go into a certain part of this dungeon, and you can choose what quest it is that you're trying to do, right?
Yeah, there's a whole lot to this. Like, there's a whole provisions screen where you buy everything that you need on your thing. But here's the thing. Whatever you don't use, you don't get back, and you don't sell either. Yeah. So if you buy too much, that's just wasting money you just threw away that you could have done for upgrades. There's a lot to this game. There, you've got to manage personality. Well, not personalities, but personality traits. You got to manage stress levels. You got to manage equipment. You got to manage. And I'm making it sound like a micromanaging game, but at the end of the day, it's only four people going through a dungeon.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to quickly run down where we're at. Bobby has a hard noggin, which means he's hard to get. Yeah, it's hard to crit on him. He has quick reflexes. He's a precision strike. He's a motherfucker, by the way. He's the best guy on my team. You're the highwayman.
The highwayman? Which one is that?
He has a pistol.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
he has a great shot. I haven't had much luck with those guys.
Wow, I've been upgrading his stuff. He's really good. He has precision striker, which means he crits more. And here's the best one, nymphomaniac, which means he relieves the most stress. Where, Bobby?
In the whorehouse?
Yep. It's awesome. 20%. But here's the downside. He also has God-fearing, which he can only relieve stress at the Abbey by praying to God.
Wow.
So despite...
Good predicament.
Despite him wanting some pussy, he can't get it. But there is a... what is it called? It's basically an insane asylum.
Oh, the sanitarium.
Sanitarium. Yeah. That's what it's called, yeah.
You can go in there. You can put a person in there for a week, and it'll get rid of one personality trait.
Yeah, and when you're saying a week, that means one whole adventure. So
yeah.
So you have to fill out your squad of four because you put yourself at a disadvantage if you take any less than that. And you go out there, and when you come back, a week has passed. This game is all about, and I've talked about this before, and maybe it's one of the things in a game that I like, risk versus reward. Mm-hmm. Should I go to that next room? Can I put... Okay, this guy's stressed the fuck out. Can I push him one more room? If I back out of this mission, everybody's stress goes through the roof. So you gotta, it's all about risk management. And I love that, apparently.
This game does that very well, because to go on a quest that's very dangerous, but also very rewarding, you want to send your best guys. But if he dies, if one of your guys dies, they don't come back.
Right.
So you could leave them behind, send like your weak characters in to go do an easy mission, but then you get minimal gains. So it does the risk and reward play very well.
And multiple levels too. Which guys are you going to take? How much money are you going to spend on this expedition? How much will you push them when they're stressed out?
Yeah, and the stress management. I mean, we should talk about that, because that's the really new thing in this game is
stress. Yeah, it's stressing, no pun intended, PTSD, really, right? So if you were to, what I always do is I take games and I try to put them in reality. All these RPGs we've ever played throughout history, all the Final Fantasies, all those battles, those dudes would be accumulating stress. But that's a stat that's never considered, ever, until now, right?
Yeah, it does add an extra layer of realism to it, because a lot of things will happen that will induce stress. If you back up through the dungeon, that causes stress. If the torch light is low and it's very dimly lit, that you're more prone to stress. And also, there are characters, there's enemies that don't do a whole lot of damage, but do a lot of stress to you, because maybe they do some like
the spiders hellish, and shit.
Yeah, right? The spiders or these kind of witches. I don't know exactly what their names were, but I noticed they were doing this move that would do like 20 stress, but only one damage. And I didn't think it was a big deal until I played a little more of the game and understood the mechanic a little bit better. And the stress really adds up, because when all your characters are stressed, they eventually they eventually come to a snapping point where they just lose it, and they either have a really negative result of it or a positive one. And that can go either way. And it also, you know, if one person on your team becomes really stressed, that affects the rest of your team. So it's like a domino effect.
Yeah, for sure. Because like on my first playthrough, by the way, I deleted my first account because I fucked that shit all up. Not my first account.
But with these kind of games, you usually do.
Yeah. And so, yeah, on that first one, my healer became abusive and would just insult all my other dudes, which every time she insulted them, their stress level would go up.
Yeah.
And she was just insulting nonstop. Oh, why am I here with children? Oh, you guys aren't real men.
It's kind of like playing a MOBA.
Yeah. In IRL.
You get that one toxic player and it just brings everyone else down.
Yeah. Let's see. The art style and the atmosphere is super dark and ominous. You kind of feel like there's not a whole lot of hope.
Yeah, the narrator constantly chimes in throughout your quest.
That makes it even worse because he has a gravelly voice.
Very gravelly voice. I'll tell you what I didn't like,
Bobby
though.
Bobby really likes the whorehouse.
Title? They don't let you, they don't let you name your... yeah, I don't think that'll go too much. But they don't let you name your characters or modify their appearance, which, I don't know. I don't really care about this.
I named all my guys.
You can rename them?
Yeah, that's why
I didn't know that.
By the way, let me cut in. Chad has Warrior of Light, which means he does well when you light in lit areas. Keep your torches lit. He's a backtracker, which means he cannot accumulate stress when he's walking backwards. Who cares? Anyway, let me get to the important stuff. He's a kleptomaniac. So, some of the treasure keeps to himself, which you don't get to use for everybody else. Hmm. So, it's kind of fucked up. And he's scared of the dark, which means he's like 20% less effective when your torches are down.
Hmm.
And, guys, I wish I was making this up. Let me go through mine, right? He has stomach cramps. Negative 20% to all heals incoming.
That's only when you're camping, though.
No.
Pretty sure. That one's only when you're camping.
Oh, okay. Zoophobia. He's scared of beasts. He does less damage to them. Okay, fine. Tuckered out. If he's under 50%, he does less damage. He has the runs. The runs. Negative 20% to dodge. Negative 20% to getting healed. So that's what's up with him. So it's almost like real life.
You know what they don't have in this game that I was surprised? They, you know, like in Divinity Original Sin, it will show you at the top of the screen the order.
Order?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this one doesn't.
I think that's on purpose, though.
Well, I think so, because the way that they do it is each character has a speed attribute, and usually speed will determine your position in that order. But I think what happens is some people have such high speed, they can get two attacks in the time that it takes one person to get one attack.
Yeah.
So I've noticed at times when my speed's been greatly reduced, the enemy will have like turn after turn on me before I finally get to go. But the one thing I don't like about this game so far, and I don't know, it's not a big complaint, is... with any of these games, it almost feels like you're waiting for dialogue boxes or for character animations to finish before you can make your next move. And this gets even worse when your characters are stressed out. When they're stressed out, they'll start saying stuff. Dialogue boxes will pop up. And if you've got two, three, or your entire team stressed out, like they've hit their max stress level, then you'll just spend like a good 10 seconds just waiting for those dialogue boxes to go
away. You can't do anything during them?
No, you have to. You can't even click to acknowledge them, and then like, okay, they go.
See, I never let my stress get that high. Like, I'll have one person stress out to the max, but I've never had more than one ever stress out to the max.
Yeah. So. Well,
maybe you should manage. You know.
Yeah. The asylum. This is my first playthrough, and I reached that problem when I played the, I guess what would be the first boss. It was a giant.
It was a necromancer, right?
No, it wasn't a necromancer. It was like a giant rat or something. And he had a little mouse buddy named Wilbur. Or maybe it was a pig.
I haven't played it yet, but one of the missions is go kill the necromancer at the first dungeon.
Oh. Or
whatever. Maybe he is one.
Yeah, but my entire team got stressed out, and I was just waiting for these dialogue boxes to go through. And even though the character animations, like when you go to attack somebody, like that takes, what, maybe 1 or 2 seconds?
Yeah.
That still gets really old after I played 4 hours of the game. After 4 hours, you're just like, okay, I know I didn't attack. You don't need to do the whole elaborate character animation I've seen 20 times already. So
I wouldn't say it's elaborate, but it does take 1 to 2 seconds.
Yeah.
It's just a zoom function, really.
Yeah, it kind of zooms in and it's slows. It looks cool, but that stuff wears with time very quickly.
You know, I'm only in my first 3 hours of this game, but the narrator has not got old to me yet at all.
See, I'm getting there. Not quite yet, because he doesn't talk a whole lot. He'll kind of chime in every now and then, but it's very quick and very brief, and it doesn't obstruct gameplay. You aren't waiting on him to finish what he's saying so you can do something else.
Right.
But with these other things, you are.
And sometimes he'll bring to my attention something that I hadn't noticed. Like
a trap or...
Yeah. So there's something to him, or like one of my guys will get... It's not all bad, guys. Like, if one of your dudes scores a massive critical, all your guys' stress comes down a little bit.
Yeah,
which is nice.
You can do to reduce the stress level.
Yeah,
outside of your camp, because like you go and you do the dungeon, and then you have that planning phase where you're in the hamlet, and then you can do things like send them to either the you can have them go get drunk or go to the whorehouse or go to the church and whip themselves, like all this different stuff that does relieve stress. You can also go to the blacksmith, upgrade items, go to the training facility and upgrade their abilities.
Which all cost gold. And so the only, maybe you know more than I do, but when you back out of a mission and you run away because everybody's about to die and they're all stressed out, you get even more stress, but you keep the money that you had so far. So it's not totally bad.
No.
But you do have to spend a bunch of money reducing their stress.
Yeah. And what ends up happening, at least for me, is that I've got an A team and a B team. So I've sent one group on a quest. They go do their thing. They come back and then they go to the bar or they go to
the abbey.
The church. Yeah. The abbey. And they relieve stress. And then I send my other team in. And usually I try to get one person in the sanitarium to get rid of a negative attribute as well.
But where are you getting all this money? I can't afford all that shit. Maybe. Mm-hmm. Are you buying a lot of provisions as well?
I usually only spend a couple hundred, like maybe 600 in provisions when I go. I don't spend a whole lot.
Do you take that damage from hunger? Like starve?
No.
Wow. See, one time I did the hunger, which cost you 4 food, right? I got to the next room, got hunger again. It's all random. So
that's never happened to me before.
Yeah, it can you can get hungry a lot.
Sometimes I've noticed it's different people that get the hunger affliction. But overall, this game is really good, and nothing feels unnecessary about it. Like, all the stats, it doesn't even feel complex, just because everything has meaning and everything is makes sense. Like, the stats, the abilities, the items.
Yeah, like today, I was like, ACC is listed on everything. I was like, what is ACC after all? I know it's something good.
Mm-hmm.
You just highlight it and it tells you exactly what it is. Yeah. So.
Which is accuracy.
Yeah.
Your chance to hit. And there's like, and they don't overdo with abilities. You can, I think there's like each character has 8 abilities, but you can only use 4 of them, 5 of them.
Yeah.
And
you adapt them to your play style.
Yeah. And there's a lot of room there's a lot of different ways to build the team, and that's what I think a lot of games don't do well enough.
Let's see if we went for the same thing. Very briefly, I have my tank in the front. I've got 2 AoE guys that do AoE damage, and I have the guy that buffs people in the back. So he buffs one of the AoEers, and then they both AoE. That's what I'm doing right now.
I don't know. On my first team, I've got like 3 heavy damage dealers. And,
like single target?
One of them can chain hit the front 2 people. So it's not quite AoE.
Right.
But I've got 2 pretty heavy damage dealers up front. The occultist I've had really good luck with.
Yeah, he moves people around, right? No,
the bounty hunter.
The bounty hunter,
He's on my B team. He's pretty good too, though.
Yeah, he'll move. So we haven't talked about this yet, but there's 4 positions. You got the back line and your front line. But the bounty hunter can be like Scorpion, be like, get over here, and take somebody from the back line to the front line where they're almost useless. They can't do a whole lot from there.
Yeah, you know, one thing I didn't get right away, but I eventually figured out is when you hover over an ability to see what it does, it also shows you two images. One, and there are four dots, and some of them are lit and some of them aren't.
Right,
but they're showing you where you have to be in your lineup to be able to use that. So maybe one character can only use this ability if he's in the front or second to front position.
It shows their preferred slot, and the one that's glowing the brightest is where they can use all their abilities. And then there'll be like a half glowing one, and that's where, you know, they're not quite as good.
Oh, yeah, on their character profile.
Yeah, on their profiles, yep.
Yeah, but it also shows you what enemies you can hit. There's some moves that can only hit the back enemies.
Yeah.
And, you know, usually your ranged can be further back and do damage.
Bobby, do you think you'll be buying this, or?
Yeah, once I find a deal on it, I'll definitely buy this, because I'm going to be playing a lot more of it. This is the first game that I've endorsed this year. I mean, I said I like Broforce last week, but that came out, I mean, that's an early access too, but that's been around for quite some time.
Yeah.
This one came out February 3rd.
So, if you're a first-person shooter, headshot, you know, flash-banging motherfucker, you're not going to like this. It's a kind of a thinking man's game. So, it's got very positive. So, I thought it should be overwhelmingly positive, especially since we like it so much. So, I was going through the thing, and all the complaints that I saw were all about the game being RNG, which means random, right? So, as good as you play, you might get shit on and have a horrible, horrible time. Two things that I have to say about this. That's where strategy comes in. Strategy used aptly can negate. Thank you. Negligate is better. I've had a couple drinks. negate some of the bad luck. Now, if you're using strategy and you get good luck, I mean, that's when you beat the game. But all you're trying to do with all your strategy and all your smarts is trying to negate some of the shitty things. Just like in Binding of Isaac, so much random shit's going on. If you're playing smart, you're playing wise, you can negate a lot of that. So, you can't really say that there's no skill. There's a lot of skill going into it. But does that skill ultimately matter in a really shitty game? No. So what you're hoping for is for your knowledge and your luck to come together. And that's what roguelikes are about.
Yeah.
It's probably my favorite genre because of it.
Yep. Still going strong, apparently, too. I mean, I thought...
Negligate? Maybe that's the title.
Negligate. That's a good one. I'll write that. I'll put that in the maybe pile.
All right, cool.
Negligate. Legit? Question mark?
There you go.
All right, so that's Darkest Dungeon. Definitely a recommendation. That's on sale for $19.99 currently. Don't really anticipate this going on sale for any cheaper anytime soon.
When you say when it's on sale, it's being sold for?
Being sold for, yeah. Oh, okay. It's not on sale. Yeah.
I don't see that coming on sale anytime soon.
Yeah. Okay, let's see what else we got. I guess we can move on to our highlights and lowlights of the past week.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the highlights and lowlights.
do you want to start out?
No, I've been talking too much. Go ahead.
All right. I had an interesting occurrence this week. I've been playing periodically Duke Nukem 3D, the Megaton Edition, really old game, slightly remastered, so it's a little more... it's a little easier to stomach, but...
Bob, can I cut in? I'm sorry.
Yeah,
So, a couple of weeks back, I said that, like, movie remakes or something and something else should be shot for shot. Kind of like Resident Evil, right?
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't this be remade in the id 4 engine? Shot for shot?
I cannot know.
So I never played Duke Nukem back in the day, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time I figured out it was a thing, I went back and I was like, ooh, I can't even play this thing.
Yeah.
Right? So I can't enjoy it. And I could only imagine a 12-year-old or a 15-year-old trying to go back and like, what's the whole deal with this? Oh, old people are stupid. Right?
Yeah. I don't know.
So we need a shot for shot reimagined. No, not reimagined.
I don't know. Duke Nukem Forever is about as close as to that as you're going to get. I mean, it's just a first-person shooter, but it came out when first-person shooters were something new and amazing.
Weren't the one-liners and the, you know, the atmosphere and shit, that was all novel as well, right?
Yeah, but I feel like that's been done to death, too. If you were to remake this shot for shot, I just don't think it'd have the same impact as Grim Fandango or Resident Evil. I mean, Resident Evil started a genre. You
know, which is crazy, right?
Yeah.
Fuck. Did you play it yet?
Resident Evil? No.
You did buy it?
No.
Who are you, man? Get the fuck out of here.
When I catch it on sale.
Okay.
But anyway, I got caught in an infinite death loop. I don't know if that's the official name for this, but this is something I think a lot of old gamers are familiar with, where you save or you quick save at a point, and then 1 or 2 seconds later, you die.
Yeah.
So you reload that last save only to die over and over and over
again. And it was probably a quick save, and your last real save was way in the fuck back,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. They only give you 15 or 20 save slots on this. And I've got we'll get into saving systems and like what's a good one, what's a bad one. But the way I usually do my saves is I do like one save at the beginning of the level and then I do a quick save. So I would, in this scenario, I would have to go all the way back to the beginning of the level. And I was like right at the end. I eventually did
back
make it.
Back to the beginning of the level. Stop bitching, dude.
Hey, man, you're
dude, Tony. I mean, I'm glad you brought it up so that we could talk about saving mechanisms, but the beginning of the level...
This could be much worse.
Yeah. Yes, this could be much, much worse.
Well, that's
worse.
Because I have this amazing saving system that I've mastered over the years.
And I was about to mention that. Like, I hate you as a person and everything you ever say, but you having your own saving mechanism that you do, like, wow, because I've been screwed by this pooch more than once.
Yeah. Well, the problem is, you know, some idiot's going to listen to this and be like, well, you shouldn't have saved there. It's like, well, thanks, genius.
It's like Joe and the volcano, dude. As she's falling into the lava, it's like, save right there. Yeah. It's the worst part.
Well, I was coming down an elevator, and at the end of this elevator was a boss at the end of the level. What I eventually did was reload and found out that I could, okay, if I run to the right real quick, I can get out there, I can throw down the Hollow Duke so he attacks that, and then I can go heal with this med pack, and then I can take him out. And that I learned that incrementally, reloading the save probably 10, 15 times. It took a while, but I did make it through this, so happy ending to that. But what was the point I was trying to make? but the reason that I save in certain locations, I'm very picky about my saves. Every time I save a game, even a quick save, I make sure that my character is pointed in a specific direction because I could come back to this game a month later and be like, okay, where was I? There's no, some games there's no mission objective or anything pointing you in the right direction. So like I'm playing Doom 3 right now. I make sure that I'm pointed in a direction that I'm supposed to be going in. If I'm at a fork in the road, then I make sure both those forks are in my line of sight. Or make sure like the door I just went through, I'm not looking back at that. Because when I reload the save, like maybe a couple weeks later, I'm gonna be like, oh, do I go this way? What was I doing? I have no idea. So I'm very picky about
Very interesting.
Yeah. So that's why when I was going down an elevator, I was like, okay, quick save. Because by the time the elevator gets to the bottom, then I know where I'm going. I was going down this elevator. Boom. There we go. Back into the game. So yeah,
That's why when I go to sleep, I make sure that I'm either looking at a lady that's sitting next to me or my cack. One of those has to be the last memory that I have. Very similar.
All this is negligated, though, if I may use that term, by modern games, because they do the saving for you in most cases. You know, they take it easy on you. This is something that only happened in old games.
But you can't say that they take it easy on you, because Darkest Dungeon saves as you go, no matter what you do.
Yeah, you can't do anything about it.
Yeah, there's no, let me try this and go back, which I love. I love because you know, you're cheating the system if you do that.
Exactly. That's a real game right there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But, you know, a lot of first-person shooter games will, you reach checkpoints, it automatically saves. I think and I don't mind that. I think that's good. I like it when they save at checkpoints, but I also like it when they allow me to quick save at certain times as well.
Yeah. So, before we get into what the best is, I want to say why I got so defensive when you brought that up, one level. I got to the end of Final Fantasy VII, which is the quintessential RPG in our lifetime. Like, if you were to take a survey of what is the RPG, it would be probably Final Fantasy VII on the PlayStation 2.
Yeah.
And so I got to Sephiroth, which is the last area, with the last guy. Mm-hmm. But he has an area before him, right? And it warned me. It said, you know, don't, if you're not ready to proceed, do not continue. And I was like, well, I think I'm good enough, right? Like, I've been playing this game for 80 hours or 70 hours. I think I'd take this guy. So I saved. That's it. My old save was gone. That was it. And I couldn't even come close to killing Sephiroth. Not even close. So I was stuck. That was it. My one save was overrided. And I had committed to killing the last guy. I couldn't kill him. Maybe there was a trick. I never even looked up whether or not there was something you were supposed to do.
Could have been doing it all wrong.
This is before our Google. Yeah. So,
well, and a lot of times with PC games, you can go online and download saves too.
I've never done it once in my whole life.
Me neither, but I like to know that that's
Fuck
out there.
Fuck you, you have.
No, I actually never have.
Oh, really?
But I like to know that that option is out there.
No, for sure.
Just in case.
Especially for Skyrim, where you can fuck up your whole game by modding.
Yeah. Well, Skyrim's a good example of a game that you have to manage your saves. Like, you have to, or does it automatically save? It does auto-save.
No, you auto-save.
Yeah.
And it does, yeah. And every time you go through a door or something.
Yeah, it auto-saves. And then you can manually save whenever you want. Yeah.
So, I had fun with that, but I also cheated the system. Like, you know, right before going into something big, I would always quick save.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say it somewhere. I'm going to say it goes by game by game. But if I had to commit to one and there was only one save version to go by, I would have to go by checkpoints. I think that's ultimately the safest, not the safest, but the most legitimate.
Yeah.
Way.
You know, it depends on the type of game, but generally I agree with you.
Yeah, because in Skyrim, you could put in an hour into a dungeon before you got to the boss. And if you died at the very end, right before the boss, I mean, that's not really fair, right?
Yeah.
So that's not okay.
Replaying content is such a useless... It's... I don't know. I don't believe that you should make the player, from a developer standpoint, because... Obviously, I know so much about developing games, but I don't think it's fair to make the player go back and have to redo something they already did. I don't know. That's my least favorite part about a lot of games.
Yeah,
replay using content.
Yeah, and if they're doing it maliciously, we're like, "What fuck? We need some filler here." So
yeah, and you can't skip dialogue lines.
I
don't know. I mean, there's games that totally use that as a good mechanic, like Super Meat Boy, though. So, I mean, it can be twisted, but in the traditional sense, I think it's just useless.
Yeah, and that brings up my Dying Light co-op. I was playing with my nephew, Dick Nick, and I was well above him when we first played, and I went back to go play some levels with him, right? I was like, oh, this is going to be so much fun. And we go, and then I realize what a messenger boy game Dying Light is. You know, you're basically just doing runs for everybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not fun as co-op. It is not fun at all if you've already done those quests. Right. So I was like basically standing around while he was climbing. Oh, actually, so there's the tower quest where you have to climb towers, right? And I was like, hey, Nick, these towers are motherfuckers because... I was telling him somehow this became a mechanic where you have to climb towers in AAA titles. And, this one is the best and most difficult one there is. So good luck. And I was going around, fucking around. And, he goes, motherfucker, I played right through Far Cry 4. I am a master. Oh! And he fell like three stories. And I go up to go save him, and he is crumpled fetus, right? Like, just like his body is crumpled. I took a screenshot of this so you could see that on my profile if you want. And it was so great because he was just talking about how he's a master of climbing towers, and he cracked his shit. So that was pretty good.
So do you think it was so boring for you because you were overpowered and there was really no challenge in it for you?
There was a little bit of that, but also...
It's just redoing the same
content. He's running, and I'm running together. And maybe the best part of co-op... Well, Mitch match co-op where I'm higher level than them, is when we're doing parkour, you can't see yourself do parkour because it's first person, right? Mm-hmm. So you're imagining you're doing cool moves, but you have no idea. But when you're playing co-op, you're both doing it right side by side. And every once in a while, one of your parkours makes you look to the right or left where he is. And you're like, oh, that's what that looks like. And it looks pretty sweet. It looks like you're traveling through the city together, you know, jumping over zombies. And that's pretty cool. Hmm. So anyway, I was like, he really liked the game as well. And I said, play up to the point I am. And then we'll play together. And now that we're on the same missions, it's fucking awesome. It was really good.
Oh, yeah.
And they...
How many people can you have in that?
Up to four.
Okay.
And we also played some PvP. And I'm going to, right now, say that I had some lag. Because we got our asses kicked nonstop. And the PvP is very... Getting into it is fucked. The way you start it, like, you would think that you could just go into a PvP server, five humans versus four zombies, and have a good time. Something like that. No, it's nothing like that. You have to be playing your regular game. You need to set yourself up for invading at any time. You need to set your server for public viewing. And then you have to have whoever you want on your team, me, join. I had to join his game, and all these other settings had to be in, and then we got invaded. And then it became nighttime, and then we fought the guy. So it's the good side of it is it doesn't disrupt the story at all. Like, you're going about your mission, and somebody calls you on the radio and like, hey, just found out some bad shits over here, and you have to go kill the nests. And it turns nighttime. It really makes it kind of seamless, the PvP, into the story. But as far as just playing PvP, just for PvP's sake, you can't do it.
So you can't just boot up a game and get into a match right away?
No, you have to boot up your story mode. Oh, and by the way, all the stuff that you use in PvP takes away from your resources. So like a Molotov cocktail or all that shit's gone in PvP. But you are getting XP. You're getting double XP because it's nighttime.
Oh. So the PvP is almost just like an add-on to the single player.
Right. Yep. And as a zombie, being the antagonist, you can just, instead of playing Dying Light, you can just say, I want to be a zombie, and then try to invade people's games.
Do you get any permanent XP from that?
Or? Yeah, on both sides. Yep.
Huh.
So you can unlock... I was very impressed by the skill trees on the zombie side. There's a bunch of shit you can spec into by killing people, yeah. And the tricky part is that, let's say four humans were playing together and then they got invaded, right? Mm-hmm. I think there's only one zombie maximum. So he could be up against four humans. Where if he took one down, it could be a domino effect and kill all four in a row, but... Generally, he's going to be at a disadvantage. I don't think that as zombies, you can group together and invade somebody's team. It's really weird, man. It took us like 15 minutes to figure all this out, including Google searching. Hmm. So it's not very user-friendly or dumb Mexican-friendly because we're both like, what?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, that's interesting that you can... Join. You can just say like, "Hey, I just like playing the zombie in this game," and that's all you can do with it. You don't even have to play the human campaign, I guess, if you want.
And it's super fun because you're basically Spider-Man. You can just web sling all around.
Wow!
And yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, at some point, I want to get that game as well. I'm hoping people are still playing it by the time that happens.
As far as co-op goes, though, I played Ib and Ob with my girl. I guess I might as well make it a segment: the co-op with your lady. Segment. And so the Humble Bundle had the co-op bundle. Did you take a look at it, Bob?
Yes, I did, but I think I had everything on it.
You're a son of a bitch. So anyway, I didn't have any of that. So, and they had a really good, like, you let me know about their other one, their weekly bundle.
Yeah.
It was an amazing one. Like, a bunch of good shit.
Oh, yeah. Deus Ex, Human Revolution, Hitman, Absolution.
How about Tomb Raider, the best game ever made?
Tomb Raider was on there. There was another one too that was really good. I actually ended up buying it
what?
Just for
giveaways and shit.
Now, there was some games in there that I really wanted, but I do have an extra copy of Deus Ex, Human Revolution, and not Tomb Raider. That was on the third tier. One other one. I don't know. I got some really good free games. If you want one, hit me up. I'll give you the best audio possible list.
Is when somebody's trying to think of something and the other guys can't come in to, it's like, man, that one girl, her name was, and then the other guys don't want to say anything and fuck it up. Like his thought process. So anyway, talking about co-op, Ibn Ob from the ground up. I don't even know if you can play this single player. Can you play it? Single player?
I think you can, but I haven't.
You wouldn't want to because, I mean, I don't understand how the AI would know how to puzzle solve with you.
Yeah.
The only thing I can equate it to as far as the co-op portion of it, just the co-op version of it, is Portal 2. You're working together to figure out puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
Besides that, that's where the similarities end. This is a super cutesy, psychedelic, in pastels. It's like pastel, psychedelic, super simple platformer puzzle, right?
Yeah. So that about sums it up.
Yeah, pretty much. A bunch of words, but pretty much that's what it is. It's a puzzle jumping game where you and another person need to figure out how to jump in order to best maximize your points.
And one person can jump on, you're walking along this ground in the middle of the screen, and one person can jump on the other side of it, and they're upside down. So they jump towards the bottom of the screen, and they can do things that way.
It's almost like a negative. It's almost like a negative version. Mm-hmm. It's an upside-down version of the same world.
Yeah.
And one can affect the other in minute ways.
Yeah, with reverse gravity.
Yeah, so you send one on the Earth, the underworld, and one in the overworld, and you work together to try to figure shit out. Very fun. My girl said, oh my God, so cute, like 5 times. There's these... They threw things in this game just for cuteness. There's little balls that have no bearing in the game. They're about tennis-sized balls, little things. And all you can do is, like, squish them or hit them around. Actually, for a little bit, we were doing, like, volleyball with them, just fucking around. And then I missed my volleyball shot and actually squished one, and we laughed a lot. I don't know how to explain it. But it did get very repetitive very quickly. Even though we were figuring out puzzles together, and even though she might be a better platform jumper than I am, because she got through some shit that I didn't repetitively.
How long do you think this game is? Because I played about an hour of it.
We played about an hour, so I don't know. Okay. And that might be it. I say a bunch of good things, you know, psychedelic pastels and fucking jumping and super cute. None of those are up my alley. The co-op, it kind of is, but it's super repetitive. All the mechanics we just named is all there is. There's no, you can't even hold one button to make yourself run faster, or you can't hit things, you can't pick things up. There's the one button, jump. I would recommend it only because it's super duper cheap. You can usually get this for under $3, probably.
I don't know what it's going for now. It hasn't been on sale recently, but yeah, I think this is the second appearance it's made in a bundle, and I think you got a 2-pack too. Like, that was actually for a 2-pack, so you could actually, the idea is that you're going to give one copy to someone else and they're going to play with you.
Hit me up if you want it. I'll give it to you.
Although, is it local co-op only?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Maybe not.
So anyway, I picked up 6 games off of this Humble Bundle for $5. No, 5 games for $6. And that's the only one I played. It sounds like I'm complaining, but we had a good time for that hour, for sure, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it really is the quintessential get your girlfriend to start playing video games with you, because it's so simple. It's literally jump and aim.
Yeah.
And but, Bobby, you said that your girl...
Yeah, this is probably the last game that my girlfriend and I played together, and she's just not good with a controller. She never grew up with a console in the house or ever really played one growing up, so, you know, we're starting from ground zero, but she had a very difficult time with it.
It's funny. It's like, how do you get somebody started? Okay, so she'll talk about things you're not interested in, and obviously you do the same for her.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get somebody to try? how would you start somebody off, right?
Well, you know, this is a simple game, but still jumping puzzles require hand-eye coordination.
Right.
And they require
which you're going to need for video games, period.
No, not all of them. Darkest Dungeon doesn't require anything like that.
That's all thinking, but...
Yeah, but there's a lot of games that are that don't require...
There's no way you could give Darkest Dungeon to anybody for the first game, ever. No way.
No, probably not.
Yeah.
Well, unless they're coming from a tabletop game or something
like
that.
Yeah, right.
You know, they played a lot of D&D. But the hand-eye coordination and the dexterity with the controller is something that I think people who have never played any video game struggle with immensely. Like, they, it's like learning to ride a bike or drive a car for the
Absolutely.
First time.
Yeah.
It's very difficult. And some games don't require a high level of that, and those I would almost consider easier than a jumping puzzle.
Yeah, in certain ways, yeah. It depends on what you're good at naturally and what you're not. Some people could just pick up a controller and just, you know, jump to any ledge.
Yeah, it becomes intuitive at a point, but
right.
I don't know. I feel like everyone grows up playing video games, but the reality of it is there are people who don't.
I'll never forget this. There was our local arcade here. An arcade, by the way, is a collective of video games in one room, guys. I know none of you guys know what an arcade is. But anyway... there was our local arcade hero who was, you know, the best at Street Fighter. He would just fuck everybody up. And one kid, while everybody's standing in awe watching this guy work, one kid is like, "Hey, how can I get good like you?" And he said, "Kid, play a bunch of Mega Man." And it was just like, you know, work on your eye-hand coordination. That's basically what a lot of it comes down to. Even if you're going to go all the way to Twitch... Doom or Counter-Strike, it comes down to Twitch responses, right?
Yeah, you definitely got to master that. I've got years and years of practice when it comes to that shit.
I was a little jelly, dude, when we were playing Toxic. I gotta admit, like, Bobby's complaining about killing everybody.
I'll find something to complain about.
It's like a hot chick saying, "Oh, I'm too hot. Oh, it sucks being blonde with big tits."
That's exactly what they sound like. That's amazing. So here's something else I'll complain about, too. Heroes of the Storm. Actually, I'm not going to complain too much about this. I like this game. I finally got it because...
Got it as in you acquired it?
Yes.
Okay. Not that you understand it now.
No, I mean, I understand it, but I got the Founders Pack, which automatically granted me access to the beta, because apparently they weren't going to give it to me any other way.
Did it cost you money?
$40.
Wait, you paid $40 for... You don't buy any...
I know, like, which seems price. Like a lot. And Far Cry 4 was on
sale.
Wait.
Yeah. What is... Were you... You wanted a MOBA? Were you itching for
a
MOBA?
I really wanted to play this game. And it's a Blizzard game. And Blizzard games Blizzard has a sale. I've seen Blizzard games on sale once in my life. They hardly ever have a sale.
They're like Apple.
Price. Yeah, they have quality games. And I really wanted to play this. And they give you some perks for buying the Founders Pack, which really aren't that great. They give you a few mounts, skins, a few characters unlocked right off the bat, and some gold. Not worth it in my opinion, but I just wanted to play the game, so... I was really buying access to the game in beta. I have no idea when this is going to be out of beta, by the way. So who knows? If it comes out tomorrow, I'd be pissed. But
right.
I am enjoying it. I'm liking it a lot, even though MOBAs are a thing of the past for me. And right off the bat, there's a lot of differences with this game. PC Gamer actually has a great YouTube video about the 5 key differences between Heroes of the Storm and the 5 things you should be aware of. And you should definitely check that out if you want a detailed explanation. But I'd say the biggest one is the maps. There's several different maps, and they're all very objective-based. It's not like your other MOBAs where you're laning and just pushing that lane, and, you know, you got a jungler who's trying to gank. Each map has its own specific objective. In one map, you...
Kind of like a fire giant?
Yeah, but it's not like the fire giant. They're all different things. Like, you have to go somewhere, kill some minions, stand on a spot for a while... Or in some one place, it becomes nighttime and you have to kill these plants and collect the seeds. Or in...
More RPG-ish, maybe it sounds like.
More RTS-ish.
Okay.
Definitely more along the lines of an RTS. There's one where you have to kill these pirates and then you have to go turn in the gold that you get from them to this pirate captain in the middle of the map. And then he then bombs your opponent's towers. So you don't... pushing lanes is not super important. Even killing jungle creeps, like you kill them and then they push your lane and they're very strong units. You kill a jungle creep and then you stand on the point for a while and then that jungle creep spawns under on your team's side and then it pushes the lane for you. So you've got to get those. But really, you in the pirate map, you can just control the pirate point all the time and your team can't turn in coins. If you kill somebody, they drop all their coins. You get it. It's definitely different, but at the end of the day, it's another MOBA. Like, it's really all the same. It's just micromanaging. It's like clicking abilities, knowing when and where to use them. The combat's the same. Group fights.
Well, you can't. Obviously, I'm going to defend it. You cannot group smite into that group. You can't do it. I don't.
Well, the top.
It is a MOBA, but it's more of a PvP action game than it is a MOBA to me.
No, it's still very MOBA-esque. I mean, you're still doing all the same stuff. You're just
would you say micromanaging though? Would you really say micromanaging with Smite? I disagree.
Maybe micromanaging is the wrong term because micromanaging implies that you've got multiple units that you need to manage. But when I say micromanaging, I mean your abilities, monitoring the map, like just multitasking.
Welcome back to Smitecast.
Multitasking is probably what I should have said, but. At the end of the day, this is just like any other MOBA. It is definitely a little more on the casual side, I guess. I don't know. Not even really. Like, I don't.
Yeah, League of Legends is really casual and very, you know, you can get into it easily.
Yeah, but I still feel like it's not. I wouldn't consider that casual. There's a lot that goes into it.
Right.
I don't know. I'm still enjoying it. I really like playing this game, and I definitely found the character that I like, Uther, because he plays a lot like Uther from Reign of Chaos and Frozen Throne. Warcraft 3.
Nobody's listening anymore.
I played a lot of 2v2 in that, and a lot of the characters that they have in this game have similar abilities to whatever game they came from, be it Diablo, Warcraft, or
that is pretty cool.
StarCraft. Yeah.
So, Bobby, for 10,000 points, can you tell us what the name was of the NPC that you could turn against your opponents in Super Monday Night Combat?
The NPC. You know, that's actually what this game feels more like is Super Monday Night Combat, because you've got to get those objectives. Same thing. You spend money, you collect money, and you spend it at these points, and then they bomb your enemy.
Right, exactly.
That's exactly what this game is like. And Super Monday Night Combat had a lot of different
maps. What was her
name
that would rain down hell?
Oh, what did he say? The guy's ex-wife, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Tammy? Terry?
Oh, come on, dude. It goes right into what she does.
Oh.
Oh.
I want to...
Okay. So, she would bomb the enemy territory. If you paid her off, her name was Shelly.
Oh, Shelly.
She would shell them.
Okay.
Nonstop.
Yeah.
Wow, a lot like my ex-wife. God damn, those announcers were so good. Bobby, okay, go out on limb. I know you don't like to rank things, but go out on limb here. As far as announcers in a game, best ever?
Come on. I mean, there's not a lot of games with announcers, but yeah, that was definitely the best ever.
Yeah.
I think they need to do that again, because the whole feel of that game was like, this is a sport. We're having fun with it.
Right.
Like, we know it's a game. Like, it's a game within a game. It's, I don't know. I've never seen anything else do what they did. God, that was so good.
So good.
Yeah. But that's my two bits on Heroes of the Storm. I'll probably be playing a lot more of that. And I don't know. I guess I recommend it, but for $40, I still feel like that's a lot, even though it's Blizzard.
So, yeah, I'm super surprised you did this. Like, out of all the things you could have bought for $40, I did not see this.
Well, like,
and that's
why
I give you a hard time.
Far Cry 4 was on sale for $40 at the same time, but Far Cry 4 is going to be on sale in 5 more months for $10. Mark my words. You can buy Far Cry 3 for $7.50.
You can't get... Okay, let's make a bet. I don't think you get Far Cry 4 for less than $20 in the next until 2016.
No, by the summer sale, Far Cry 4 will be. I'm going to predict right now. I'm making a prediction. Dare I say $7.50 at the summer sale?
Whoa!
I don't know.
Okay.
It's definitely.
Well, I said $20. So you
said
our over under is $19.
Okay, I'm saying
under. and over $19, yeah?
19, but you're getting the advantage there, because if it's $19.99, then I lose. I'm saying...
Well, that's what I meant by $20, $19.99.
Okay, so you're saying it's going to be $20.
All right.
I'm going to say it's going to be lower. I'm going to take 15 and below. It's going to be like $14.99.
Okay, what are we betting on here? One game for the same price. Whatever the price is, we'll bet that. Yes?
Wait, what?
If you win, I will buy you a game equal to the price of that, of whatever Far Cry 4 is going for.
Of whatever Far Cry 4 is going for.
Right.
Okay.
So you get the disadvantage here.
Yeah, that's not really in my favor.
Whatever.
If I win, I get a cheaper game then.
Yeah. we got a bet right now. Whatever. $30 credit on Steam.
Let's go an even 20 on it.
Even 20.
All right. Okay. $20.
There's the handshake. I hope you guys all heard.
So $15 or lower for me, $20 or lower for you.
Yep. Now, Bob, I got to bring this up. I was playing Ibn Ab, and I've never seen this warning. Okay, or I don't remember. I don't remember a lot of things. I don't remember 2 years ago. So there's a lot of things I don't remember. But as soon as I booted up Ibn Ab, it said you need a graphical update. And I was like, for Ibn Ab, which means it looks like bullshit, right? Like,
what?
Yeah. And it was that Intel needed to be upgraded, which is my motherboard. And I was like, what? I'm not talking about Ibn Ab at this point. So I had to download a client for Intel, which is the driver download or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Run that. It figured out what I needed for my motherboard. And I run that. So then I was wondering, first of all, what the fuck? And second of all, like, had I not done this...
Okay, that was like the loudest motorcycle I've ever heard, dude.
That's my girl pulling up, sorry. Maybe this is going to affect my 3D mark scores? Like, how important was this Intel update?
Now, I'll tell you what happened is it probably recognized that you have... it recognized the chipset on your motherboard, and you've got a graphics card on your motherboard. You got a VGA port on there that you could plug into. You're not using it, but it's still there.
Like onboard graphics?
Yeah, exactly. Onboard graphics. So probably saw that, assumed you were using that, and said you need to update this.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Even though you don't even use it, you're using the VGA port on the graphics card.
I love having you around. I love it. So good.
That's funny, though, that it thinks you need an update for that game.
Yeah, it was so weird. Like, my girl was holding her her controller, and I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, but I need to upgrade my...
PC problems. Yeah. PC gaming problems. All right. Should we slip into news here?
Yep.
All right. I guess, first of all, we'll talk about this interview that Rock, Paper, Shotgun did with Peter Molyneux. I read, it was really long, so I didn't read all of it, and I got the gist of it after the first question. First question of this interview, are you a pathological liar? Or do you consider yourself a pathological liar?
You know what, man? Like, you know what he is? He's a really good salesman, because twice I've fallen into his traps about the things that he claims are going to happen, but I'm also a futurist, so like anytime anybody claims anything, I think it's going to go down, so.
Yeah.
He's just a really good salesman.
I guess. I don't know why.
Do you think he believes what he says?
I think everybody kind of knows. Like, it's just him saying.
Not originally.
Just him, you know, doing what he does. I mean, for people who don't know, Peter Molyneux is kind of notorious at this point for promising a lot of features in his game that don't eventually happen when the game comes out. And
can
also,
you list some?
Not off the top of my head, no.
For sure, Goddess. But
Goddess is the biggest one. But there was a lot with Fable and Fable 2, Fable 3. And a lot of times what he does, too, is he bashes his old game and says, oh, but this next game is going to have all of it. And then that next game comes out and he says, well, that didn't turn out how we wanted. We couldn't do this because of these problems. But this next game.
Right.
So a lot of people have been upset with him for kind of leading them on. And
it kind of feels like the guys over at id, like you had the programmer. And you had the designer. If you also had this hype man as well, they would have ruled the world by now. They would have been Microsoft.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah.
But this interview, I mean, Oh man, it was brutal. Like they're just asking him really hard hitting questions and stuff, and I don't know much about game journalism.
How was he under fire?
He seemed to handle himself well. I mean, he's probably used to dodging questions like this, but I don't know if anyone's really asked these hard hitting questions to him.
He's a dodgy character.
Yeah.
Apparently.
But I don't know. I don't know if this is really, and I don't want to defend him or anything because yeah, it's pretty lame what he's been doing.
So that you don't have to go look him up. This is where I got caught in the Molyneux mist, if you will. He and Goddess, before Goddess came out, there was a cube in hyperspace somewhere. And you could buy a hammer and you could chip away at this cube. And nobody knew that Goddess was coming out. And there was this big cube. And I talked about this like on our third or fourth episode. Yeah. And I was so hyped up about it, man. Because I didn't know that he was maybe a shyster at the time. Mm-hmm. So I was like, man, this sounds so cool. You could go do it. I never bought a hammer, but you could go buy hammers and you could, you know, chip away at this cyber block. Yeah. I guess cyber block, right? And go away. And then whoever gets to the Chewy Center gets something, parentheses here, life-changing.
Yeah, which eventually, or what turned out to be a personalized message from Peter Molyneux himself. And also, they were promised to be the ruler of this new Goddess game.
So the game Goddess, you played Goddess, and you liked it, right?
At first, but then it
falls off
it
really quick.
Really burnt out my fingers. Right. It's a lot of clicking.
And you're kind of a god, right?
Yeah.
In a way. So this, and he would put you god of gods. So you would control the people that were playing, or not control them, but you know, alter things. So, what in conceptually, I mean, things like this, I love concepts so much. And so, you know, this guy said all these things, and this guy was, you know, is going to change your life if you won this thing. So, somebody won it, and then he had to wait for the game to come out and see how well it did. And Goddess came out.
Wasn't he also promised a cut of the profits, too?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yep, that's true too. Like it wasn't much. It was like 1%.
Yeah, like
1%.
But still,
so life changing, right? So the game came out, very little fanfare. People didn't like it. I haven't played it. Bobby liked it, and when Bobby said he liked it, I was about to buy it. And then the next podcast, I believe he said, you know, it fell off pretty hard. So I never.
Yeah. Let me definitely clarify on that. I played it a little bit, and we talked about it on one of our very early podcasts.
Very early, right? First 10.
Yeah. Probably? Yeah, and I was like, oh, this is pretty good. You know, it's early access. It's got a long way to go. This is before I was demystified by early access.
Right.
I was like, no early access. But, and then, yeah, like the next week, I was like, you know what? Not that great. pretty bad, actually.
Pretty much.
But, yeah, and that guy who won that, I think there's some articles out there about
it's a young kid, I think.
Yeah, some kid from the UK. And, like, they just stopped contacting him. Like, he can't get a hold of him. He doesn't know what's up or something.
Right. But what's really cool, I mean, maybe they just did this to get headlines, but some indie, I wish I had more info for you, but some indie title with an indie developer came out and said, hey, we're going to make you the god of our game since you won this thing. And they have no, to my knowledge, have no affiliation with Molyneux. Hmm. And they're like, you know, you were promised this, so we're going to try to give it to you. So they got headlines. I can't remember their name, so they're not going to get to our billions of listeners. But
yeah,
you know, at least you know it's rough, man. Because conceptually amazing, had more people bought the game, it would have been life changing. But it ended up not being.
Yeah, bummer.
Yeah, talk to me about Evolve.
Let's talk about another bummer. Evolve has been getting pretty tore up in the comments section here in the review section of Steam. And
I don't like it.
Overall, not so much of the gameplay. I mean, a lot of people are taking issue with some of the things that we noticed, just it getting kind of repetitive and not being, it being somewhat shallow as a game. But people have been really upset about the pricing structure that 2K has chosen to go with on this. Like, they were trying to pre-sell the hell out of this game.
Right, for the pre-sale, well, it was full price, right?
You didn't
get a discount.
Yeah, I mean, $59.99. You also have your digital deluxe packs for $80 and your PC Monster Race pack for $100, where you get additional skins, monster skins, the season pass. They haven't even told you what the season pass is yet, but you can buy it for $24.99. Basically, things that you can unlock, and you can unlock through gameplay, but they're just selling it to you here. And at first, I was like, you know what? They're selling skins. They're selling all this other stuff for a certain price, or you can grind for them. This is like any other MOBA out there. Why are people so upset? Probably right. Because they've never played a MOBA before. But then I thought,
that's what I'm thinking right now. This is the first I've heard any of this.
Yeah. So. Well, that's what I thought too. But then I was like, wait, you don't pay $60 for a MOBA though. You know, you don't pay $60 right off the bat just to get the MOBA. And then on top of that, it's like, okay, then I can grind or I can buy these things. It's just skin packs. I don't know why people are getting upset about that. I think the season pass, the fact that they're giving you Left 4 Dead 1 if you pre-purchase, and just...
so crazy.
2K has just kind of come under fire. I remember when I first heard about this game, I think Evan Lottie from PC Gamer was saying, like, well, it is 2K game, so I don't think we can expect a workshop, which I'd really like to see.
And they are going to, though.
Oh, they're
going to
do a workshop?
Yeah, they said that they're going to do it, or they already have. Yeah.
Hmm. I'd be surprised, because 2K is known for...
Yeah, their, not doing that.
Not ever. If you do a workshop, then it kind of undermines your DLC.
Right.
And 2K is known for doing a lot of DLC. Look at Borderlands 1 and 2. You got probably 20 DLCs for each of those games.
Right, but they also had workshops, right? I mean...
Think so. No, you can't make like a Borderlands 2 item or something.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking of... Because I'm thinking of Turtle Rock. That's why.
Oh, no. Turtle Rock's just the developer. They have no say in a lot of this, which...
I gotcha.
You know...
That's why there was such a big question, because you have somebody that's committed, it sounds like, to DLC, and the other one that never done it before. So, I'm pretty sure they said that there was going to be moddable things.
Yeah.
God, I hope so.
At the end of the day,
I know they did it for Dying Light at the very end. And the first few mods that came through are, hey, stronger monsters.
Is that published by 2K as well?
No. I was just saying, because that was the one that was on the fence. I'll stop talking now.
Well, I don't know whose decision that ultimately is. I would assume it'd be the publisher gets to say, like, oh, we're going to do a workshop, and we're going to allow people to create content for free.
Right,
and,
but then you have to tell the developers to make a workshop for it. So I'm sure it's somewhere in the middle. It's between the two, whether or not they're going to do it. What do you think ultimately? Okay, so let's go to Skyrim. Has Skyrim made more money or less money because they have probably one of the most moddable games ever? What do you think? If you're just going to throw it out?
I'd say definitely more, because people... There's like three DLCs for that game.
Right.
But really the play value is in the moddability of that. Right. And the fact that people are customizing it so many different ways.
Right.
And getting so many more hours out of it.
How is that going to quantify into dollars spent, though?
More and more people want the game. The game is more popular. If a game is popular, I was thinking about this the other day. If a game is popular, you can charge more for it. Skyrim did not go on sale for the longest time. It was... like, I don't know, what, $59.99?
Yeah.
Forever. Yeah. It went on sale for like $45.
Yeah.
Like, after a year, it didn't get down to like below $10 until like less than a year ago, I think I finally saw it.
And here's the smart play, Bob. They put new mod tools in the DLC. So you have to buy this DLC in order to run this mod.
Hmm.
And that goes with like a lot of the good ones. So, you know, they were making money on their DLCs that they wouldn't have otherwise. So that was smart, too.
But
ultimately, yes, they made more money. But that's kind of like an extreme example, too. I would say other games like... there's other games that are moddable. Like, let's say Left 4 Dead 2. Mm-hmm. Probably didn't make a whole lot more extra money off of their moddability.
Yeah, but if you keep a game popular and playable... then that
it's
going to
trickle in.
Especially a co-op multiplayer game, then, you know, like when the sale was on last summer or last winter sale, I was telling everybody, if you don't have Left 4 Dead 2, buy Left 4 Dead 2. Like, that's just, like, everybody needs that game.
And but you're a podcast millionaire. You know, most people don't have the voice that you do.
Yeah, I guess not, but I don't know. When I was talking about Skyrim being so popular and staying so expensive for so long because of that.
I like that point, though. Yeah. It is true.
Well, I was thinking that because the other day because I was thinking about ratings in games and how important are ratings in games. I know we talked about that in prior weeks, but I think if that kind of makes a big difference. Skyrim has one of the highest meta scores for a game. And if you have a higher score, you can charge more. Look at Thief. I bought Thief on that Humble Bundle for like $5.50 with like five other games.
Yeah.
You know, Thief is dirt, dude. Yeah. It was on sale for like $10 like 3 months after it came out because it got such a low. It got like in the 70s and people didn't like it. So if you get a low score, like, yeah, dude, you're ruined. If you get a high score, you can charge almost full price for the game for coming years.
So was it the DLCs or was it the score?
For Skyrim?
Yeah. Probably a combination of the two, but mostly the score, right?
Yeah. I think
does
just the
anything
base
super
game,
high scored go on sale right away? Not probably not.
No.
Why would you?
Yeah. I mean, that kind of depends on the company, too. I mean, some games always go on sale, like the Batman games, but right. Even though they do get fairly high scores. But anyway, how about this little nugget of news here? Kanye West is going to make a video game?
Apparently, it's based on his mom. Do you know how his mom died?
No.
So she went in to get plastic surgery on Kanye's daughter and died. I don't remember what kind of plastic surgery it was, but it was cosmetic and died.
So his daughter was getting plastic surgery?
No, his mom.
His mom was getting plastic
surgery. Nobody said anything about his daughter.
You said his mom was going in to get plastic surgery on his daughter. You literally
I'm drunk.
Just okay. But so his mom went in to get plastic surgery, didn't go so well.
Yeah.
And then he wrote a song about it.
Didn't go so well is a little bit of an understatement. Okay. Like literally died on his dollar. Okay. Had he not made so much money, she would have not died.
Wow.
Yeah. If you think about it that way.
That is pretty heavy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know how he's going to turn that into a video game. But this, what this reminds me of is 50 Cent. Because when 50 Cent was at the top of popularity, he was saying, I want the number one album, movie, and video game.
What game in the world. It was like Bulletproof or
yeah, it was like bullet something to do with bullets.
Yeah.
But
it was very like generic.
Yeah, it didn't do well.
It was third
neither
person,
did the movie.
I remember.
I mean it was just like and this happens all the time when you take something and you just try to throw it on a game engine. You know, this happens with every single movie out there, like Iron Man or Wolverine or something. It's like let's capitalize more on that by turning it into a game.
Dude,
it never really.
It's all the producers, man. It's all the guys in suits. They fuck everything up with their little notes. From what I've heard, I listened to a million podcasts other than ours a million times. But yeah, it's all these producers that come in and they get in the way of the art with their. This is what makes money, and it fucks everything up. Yeah. But anyway.
Well, I think PC gamers definitely, but gamers in general are just a lot more picky.
Savvy,
about their
for sure.
Yeah,
I think savvy.
Look, savvy and picky, they're a lot more critical of their games.
Right? Well, you got to take into consideration what's it cost to go see a movie? About $10, right? Mm-hmm. What's it cost to watch... to buy a game, $60.
I don't even think it's just the price, dude. I've seen people bitch over $750.
Right, but initially,
yeah,
you know, we have the most expensive media.
That is AAA. Yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah,
yeah, because it's not only the game, but the system that you play it on. Yeah, computers are expensive, especially gaming computers. Even consoles are expensive.
All right, let's get off the subject. What's next?
Epic.
Yeah, they're doing a $5 million grant program in schools for people that are working on the Unreal 4 engine, which sounds a lot to me like just like a draft or recruiting people. It's like, it's kind of like, if you like vanilla, come buy we'll pay you for liking vanilla. It's almost like they're paying people to learn to make games for them. Basically. Although I gotta say that's kind of cool that at least they're giving money to students. There's probably more people signing up to make games than ever before. So at least there is some money out there for them where there probably wasn't before, but they are definitely cornering the market on the talent. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. You know, get more people into game design. It's crazy to think like 20 years ago, this wasn't even... Like, what was it, late 90s was the first time that you could actually major or take classes or get a degree in game design or something like that.
And now, I mean, you see those commercials on TV and shit.
Yeah, they have whole institutes built for it.
Right.
It's a viable career.
So anyway, they're bribing people to come join them, but also at the same time, it's also a good thing. So the answer lies somewhere in the middle, like all things. So what do you think about this, Bob? I'm a big video game fanatic. Obviously, I have a podcast on this, but I'm also a big UFC fan, and there's talk about Hall of Fames for both of them all the time. I think this is something of the past. I don't think anybody's going to visit this place. Okay, they will if they're in town.
So it's an actual physical location.
Yes.
That they're going to build called the Video Game Hall of Fame.
Right. Kind of the Strong Museum already exists. This is like a wing that they're going to put onto it. I don't see one person taking a trip just for this thing. You know what I mean?
What's going to be in the Video Game Hall of Fame? Like video games that they consider?
Super Mario Brothers and Duke Nukem, if you're lucky.
Maybe. Like so it's like kind of a historical museum.
I mean, what are Hall of Fames but historical high points, right?
I don't know. I don't think...
The peakiest of the bar graphs. I mean...
The peakiest. I don't know if people... do people value like Hall of Fame stuff as much as they used to? Because that was like a big deal with sports. Like Pete Rose couldn't get into the Hall of Fame because he betted on baseball.
Right.
It was like the biggest disgrace ever for him.
That's why I'm saying, like, in looking back now, sure, it was important then, but now nobody cares. I don't see anybody caring about Halls of Fame anymore. These are echoes of the past.
Yeah, possibly.
Are you going to go to the video? Oh, that's why you're being...
I don't know.
You
want
to go.
Where is the Strong Museum?
How far is it? I don't know. I wish I knew. Let's make it up. If it was in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, San Francisco is always a fun trip.
Right. Would you make a trip to go to the Hall of Fame?
I'd swing by.
As you were doing some other fun stuff, right?
Yeah.
Right.
But I don't know. Who goes to... People... Do the same thing with the Smithsonian. Who's the
what?
One here? The Smithsonian.
I'm not sure it's three different words, but okay. The Smithsonian.
Okay. UK, the United Kingdom is getting their first dedicated esports arena, which only seats 600 people.
Yeah, so I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but I have an ongoing... debate going on with two of my buddies. We have a text thing and we go back and forth, and they make me make fun of me all the time about, I honestly think that esports are going to surpass regular sports at some point. Probably, maybe not even in my lifetime, but at some point, obviously they're going to. I don't see people on spaceships playing football. I just don't see it. So eventually it's going to happen. So they talk mad shit. So I see this headline and I'm like, wow, finally some ammo for my side, right? So I look it up, and it only holds 600 people. So it's not an arena, even by...
That's really weird. 600 people? I mean, that's barely enough for the camera crew.
Why would you call it an arena, man?
I don't know.
Yeah.
But that is kind of cool that they're building a permanent structure.
No, for sure.
And
based on this, if it does really well, you can see bigger ones being built, right?
Yeah.
Could you imagine like a stadium being built, and like all the soccer moms are like... who's going to play there? And they're like, oh, ninjas in pajamas. And they're like, what? You know what I mean? That'd be fucking awesome.
Yeah.
But that won't be for at least 20 years.
This is a small step in that direction.
No, for sure. I support it. It just wasn't as... When they say arena was kind of stretched here.
Okay. One person has played more than 10,000 hours of Crusader Kings 2.
So I don't know how much of this was idled. I mean,
come on. I was going to say, who's to say they didn't just leave their game running on Steam?
While they went to wherever, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, for sure he's... So this guy, Gladwell, came up with this number. It takes 10,000 hours to become a master at anything. And... I was just thinking, because it was funny that Gladwell came out with this in his book Outliers, which is really popular. He came out with this, and people have been quoting this 10,000 hour thing ever since he said it about 3 years ago, 4 years ago. And then 10,000 hours came out. So obviously, by Gladwell standards, he's a master at Crusaders King too, but he could have been a master at like bridge building or anything else, like anything useful. And yes, I'm a gamer, and yes, I've probably sank more than 10,000 hours total into gaming, and yes, I could have become a master at something, but into one game, it just seems like more of a failure than my gaming experience. You know what I mean? Because that's not even that old of a game.
Yeah, that's a lot of time. 10,000 hours. I mean, what's 10,000 divided by, 24 hours in a day?
Let's divide it by.
Let's sit here.
Women you date. It would be zero.
Yeah, that's a lot of time to be spending on one game. And who knows what he did in that game. Like, was he modding? Was he just playing the same thing over and over again? Who knows? But, yeah, that's a long time to be playing especially one single game. I don't know if I could do that.
Man.
I think I would get bored of anything after 10,000 hours.
Maybe I put in 2,000 into EverQuest. Maybe. I mean, I was legit addicted, but...
Yeah, but that's such an expansive world.
Yeah, there's so much to do.
In something like an MMO.
Right.
Like, that's a little more understandable.
Well, Crusader Kings does have a lot of content. You haven't played it yet.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Anyway, you got anything else, Bob?
No, I think that's about it. Yeah, you can check us out at dlgaming.net. That is our website. You can get to our Steam group from there, our Twitter, all that stuff. Do us a huge favor. If you leave us a review or rate us on iTunes, that would definitely help us out a lot. Thank you to those who have. We'll be doing some more giveaways soon. We haven't done any recently, but we still got a $20 Steam gift card we're probably going to be giving away in a little bit, and then whatever extra games we get in.
I'm not fucking around, guys. There's something big coming for the review giveaway, so stay tuned, and I will be promoting it soon.
Yeah, and to rehash on our review giveaway, what we do is if you have left a review, then you are automatically entered into our review giveaway. We pick one at random, and we contact you with whatever the prize is. So leaving a review is like your entry into the raffle, all the raffles that we do.
So there it is. So I think Titties was so 2014. I need ideas on what to move on to next. Nipples is kind of nice, but also there's a lot of room to play with cock. So I might just sign off with cock. So hit me up. Let me know what you think. And until next time, cock.